Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com.
Hello, and welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 123, The Great Wargaming Survey. So I am joined today with a very special guest. He's been on before, and all of you are in for a treat because the one and only Mr. Jasper Ortiz is here. He is the managing editor publications of Karen Sawe Publishers over in the Netherlands, and they put out a variety of great magazines and books, but most notably, for me anyway, is Wargame Soldiers and Strategy and Ancient Warfare, and then, of course, Medieval Warfare Magazine. So, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and thank you for doing a very credible pronunciation of my last name.
I try. I'm sure I butchered it, but I try hard.
No, actually, it was pretty close. It's one of the best attempts I've heard out of American, American podcaster, especially.
Well, we're awesome.
Steven, for instance, he can't do it for a man.
He and I were talking, and he referred to you as Jasper, and I was like, who the heck is Jasper? And then he's like, you know,
well,
over...
That's because how important I am to him.
And I was like, whoa. And then he proceeded to make fun of you for your sheep. So here's your chance to reply to him.
Yeah, well, he's just, you know, he's a little bit ignorant, but that's all right.
So today we're going to be talking about this fantastic thing that you were involved with, the Great Wargaming Survey. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about it and how it came about and why and who was involved with it, the purpose and all that sort of stuff.
To be very honest, it was a little bit of a spur of the moment idea. As you may know, in the sort of before Henry took over Miniature Wargames and merged it with Battle Games, Andrew Hubbock used to run a Wargaming Survey in Miniature Wargames every year. I don't know how many years he did it, but definitely several years in a row. But I believe it was always a published survey. So you had to, you know, the questions were in the magazine and there were multiple choice and you had to fill them out and send them in. I'm not sure that was always extremely, you know, that you obviously you limit yourself very much to your audience, namely people who subscribe and buy the magazine. And then who are willing to fill out the survey and, you know, cut it out, bangle their magazine, put it in an envelope and send it in. So I know in general what the percentages of the returns, if you do such things, it's very low. So, that was a thing that I always thought was maybe a missed opportunity. And perhaps Henry felt the same way because he obviously stopped doing it. The ideas came from the competitors. Wargames Illustrated did a survey earlier this summer, to see who the most popular figure range was. They did it on their Facebook fan page, which is, you know, a good idea. But it was only that was just one question. And that sort of triggered the idea, like, in me, like, you know, that and knowing that there's always these debates online, you know, about the graying of the hobby. What's more important, X, Y, Z, which range is most popular, which size of miniature is most popular? You name it, you look around on various internet forums and you find a host of constantly returning regurgitated threads, almost regurgitated because it's the same things over and over and over and over. And then we thought, well, why not organize a survey? It's much easier to do this day and age. With, you know, handy internet tools. And so we did. Basically, that's how it came about.
I think it's interesting that not only were you able to take something that had been out there, but in my experience, it seems like you did it bigger and better than anyone else had done it as of yet that I'm aware of. And I mean, maybe someone else has done it even greater than you had, and I'm just not aware of it, but your survey was very thorough and you were able to reach so many people, which I think is one of the key to be able to have that large sampling. Gives you a more accurate result, I would say.
I hope so. That was one of the things that we knew from the beginning. It's very, very difficult to get people to be involved in something like this. And of course, when we started out, we were hoping for a very good result in the thousands. And, you know, sort of amongst ourselves, we'd said, well, if we get 2,000-3,000 responses, that'd be really good. And obviously, in the end, in a month, we got 7,759, I see here. And, you know, getting a lot of responses to your survey, yeah, that makes it more likely that you get a representative result. Strictly speaking, of course, it's still only representative of the people who took the trouble of filling out the survey. But, you know, if the sample is big enough, then the odds that they represent the community as a whole increase. However, there's always problems and people in, as you know, we have released bits and pieces of the results, since the survey closed on July 31st. And people have said, well, you know, is this representative just for historical wargamers? Is it representative for all miniature wargamers? Is not the general sci-fi fantasy wargamer underrepresented? Maybe, possibly. It's very hard to say anything conclusive about that because as far as I know as well, there's very little material to compare it against. I mean, if we'd done this 10 years in a row, and there's suddenly a shift in something, in which period, era, topic is popular that has always been very stable before, then you might say, hey, did we just get a skewed result in some way? But yeah, there is nothing to compare it to as far as I know. So I think we have a fairly reliable result for our primary audience and that's, of course, the audience for Wargame Soldiers Strategy. Which is a historical wargaming magazine. So
I think you touched on it a little bit, but let's go back to the reason behind doing the survey. You mentioned, you know, that some others had done surveys before and they've stopped. And you alluded to the never ending debate online on what's better, what's worse, or this and that and stuff. But why would you guys decide to take up the mantle and do the survey, and what were you hoping to achieve with the survey?
Well, there's sort of general, you can, of course, have various motives for doing something like this. The cynic might say, hey, this is an excellent marketing operation for Wargame Soldiers and Strategy because they, you know, they get the word out that they're doing this and learning something about their audience and all that, which is, you know, it'd be stupid to deny that, you know, in the end, you put my time and Guy's time into creating this survey, setting it up, running it, doing, you know, press releases, writing about it. That is, in a way, it's promoting the magazine. So that's hopefully good for us. And there's also essential information about the market for us. You know, it also looks at what are the topics that your audience likes to read about. And you know, questions about what kind of magazine you like to read, you know, where do we stand in the whole range of magazines that are out there? So there's sort of selfish reasons to do it, and there's maybe journalistic reasons. You know, a magazine like this is a medium, and it's supposed to you know, to investigate the market as a whole, and that's I think that's one thing that we were trying to do here. We were trying to, you know, do what a sort of a niche magazine is supposed to do is be, you know, learn about the market and report about that. So it's, you know, and of course there's sort of our own natural curiosity about all these questions. I mean, they're the same for us and we have opinions about them and we wanted to see if we were right. So
one of the things I think is interesting is, yeah, you did this survey, and of course the results could, in some shape, help what you guys do. But if that was the only goal of it, you would have kept it private. You would have said, hey, we're doing the survey here, do whatever. But you've been releasing some of the results. You've been sharing some of the information and not like raw data, although some of it has been, percentages and so forth. But that seems to me to kind of help the greater wargaming community, and not just your publications and what all of you work on. It seems to kind of be enriching everyone. Cause if you kept it, you know, close to your chest, well, one, we wouldn't really be talking about it. We'd be talking about something else. I'd be like, so what's going on in your Rev War wargaming lately or something? but like, this is, it's information a variety of people can use for all sorts of reasons. It could be like a bunch of people want to go to the pub and, you know, figure out what's going on, or it could be used, say, for conventions or just to try to, one of the things that I'm always about is growing the hobby. I do believe the hobby's graying, in whether it's a lot or little, I'm not sure, but I think we need to grow the hobby, respectfully, and how we do that, I don't really know. And if I knew, I'd be rich, right? But I think
I doubt it, but yeah.
I think we need to do it. And I think the results of a survey like this can help with that. I think you're, depending on what the results are, and I know we'll get to those a little bit later, but depending on those results, you can look at it and say, oh, hey, look, this is something that people seem to be interested in. They really like whatever this is. They like object A. So maybe we can use object A and try to use that to relate to people, to get those who are kind of on the fringe to either become more core members of the wargaming community, whatever you want to call that member and community, whatever, however you really want to define that. But also then reach out to their friends or other people who they know, maybe people they work with, people they go to school with, people we know who look at what we do and say, oh, you play with little toy soldiers or you move people around the table and just don't get it. But maybe we can then use this information to relate to them, to say, hey, you know, you like X, Y, and Z. So did you know if you took X, Y, and Z, that's actually really similar to what I do with this stuff. And you should come and hang out and take a peek. And if you like it, you know, see what happens. And you pull them in and you grab them with that eye candy and with all the other things that all sorts of people have talked about, like doing trade shows and participation games and web videos on how to paint and just all sorts of different stuff. And really to be where the people are. And we don't know where they are until they tell us, which something like this would do. If a lot of people saying, hey, I'm someone who only focuses on looking at games that are World War II and setting. Mm-hmm. You want to go where they're going to be so you can then figure that out for yourself and say, hey, well, let me show you something that you might like. And it seems just really as a good tool to enrich people and to enrich their lives.
Well, I, you know, there was a, actually this week somebody asked, speaking of returning debates, on the miniatures page, asked the question, you know, are hobby magazines like War Games Illustrated, Miniature War Games, WSS, are they going to disappear because of blogs and the internet and all that?
No.
Everybody kind of agreed, which was good to see. And some of the reasons that were mentioned by Guy responded very briefly, and Henry responded a little more extensively. And they both said, well, you know, an editor is adds something that somebody who runs a blog doesn't do. You know, they provide professional editing. They collect the most interesting articles. They go out there. Da, 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 da. All true. However, I think one of the most important roles for a magazine that a blog has cannot do is stuff like this. Surveys, you know, gathering knowledge about the market and putting it out there online, putting it out there in, you know, hundreds and hundreds of stores in the UK, in continental Europe, in North America, in Australia, and getting the news out there. There's, you know, there's this hobby and this is how the hobby works. So I think, you know, doing surveys like this, but, you know, it's really, it's market research, which is something that hopefully, probably, all wargaming companies do. The difference is, you know, if Games Workshop, Warlord Games, Wargames Foundry, you name a couple, Plastic Soldier Company, they're all doing this kind of stuff, probably, but maybe more passively because I haven't seen it, you know, I haven't seen it coming out, but it is in their interest to keep it to themselves. You know, they collect, market information and they try and plan for the future, what their range is going to be, what the rule sets are going to bring out, this, that, and the other. I think a magazine, has a, you know, is duty bound almost to gather that information and put it out there. That's the role of a magazine. It's in that respect, it's different than somebody who's, who's providing a physical product in this market. You know, a magazine in this market is, of course, is both a commercial entity, but is also, you know, has a role sort of in between all the other companies, and the readers and all the wargamers in the world. You have a slightly different role. You're both an observer. You take part, but, and you also, you spread the news. That's what you're supposed to do. It's like a newspaper or any other news organization.
Well, let's talk about distribution a little bit and like the next step in the process. About a year ago, I had an individual on who was a Fulbright scholar, and as part of his master's in public policy, capstone project, he did a wargaming survey, as well. He targeted it only for American wargamers, North American wargamers. I'm using this as an example to show the differences as to the benefits of having an organization like Herman Sarway Publishers behind it doing something like this as opposed to an individual, even with today's modern tools. So he ran his survey for 7 weeks. He used online resources like Bell of Lost Souls and other websites, his own blog, the university. He was doing this for William & Mary. In, in 7 weeks, he collected 2,724 responses. Of those, he says, quote, 2,321 were usable. The reason why some were not usable, there was a confidentiality agreement that had to be done as part of his research, and that just some people didn't use. But you take that, and roughly 7 weeks, and almost double the amount of time that you guys used, because you had 1 month, right, for your survey. So in 1 month,
just July,
you were able to get just under 7,800 responses in almost double that time, one individual. And granted, it was a smaller demographic that he was targeting, but that one individual was only able to get a little over 2,300 plus usable ones.
Yeah.
So by having the resources that an entity like you guys have, you're able to reach more people. And granted, it's not just you, but being able to use other online resources and entities, being able to reach out to the miniatures page and all these other avenues, I think allowed you to be able to get this better sampling. And it makes me wonder, like, if you hadn't done this, if it was just, say if I wanted to do this, right? If I'm like, well, no one's doing a wargaming survey, let me go do one. And if I had the same questions and the same everything, I wouldn't be able to reach as many people as you. And I think that's the key with this. Not only that you came up with the idea, you came up with the purpose on what you wanted to do, but the next step was you had to disseminate this. You had to encourage people to take it, because a survey that no one takes isn't any good.
No.
It sits there. So, like, what did you do? What was your method for saying, well, we got this and we got to let people know? I'm presuming, obviously, you put it on your social media. You put it on the official website for Karen Sarway Publishers. But beyond that, how do you say, well, let's get Joe Smo over in Uganda to take it, or so-and-so in Australia, they need to take this too?
We weren't successful at getting anybody in Uganda, as far as I know.
Okay. Zimbabwe, you know what I mean.
It starts out with your own resources, and it went very quickly in the beginning. The people you know are the easiest ones. Of course, we have our own newsletter subscribers. We have the Facebook page with 5,000 people, 5,000 fans, which is nice. But as you well know, it's very difficult to get Facebook to actually show the message you put out there to all those people.
You're lucky if like 10% get it.
Yeah, there's a thing that, if more people respond to it, they show it to more people. And anyway, you can be guaranteed that if you put the message out there and you don't pay for it, those 100% of your fans are not going to see it. Assuming they're all real fans and not just bots and whatever. Anyway, we started with that. We wrote a press release for Miniatures Page, for Bell of the Souls, for Tabletop Gaming News. We put it on forums, and we asked, just about everybody who we knew that had a blog, can you put the word out there? I asked you too, I think.
You did. I was delighted to share it.
Us as well. It was basically what we did before we started it. We just made a list of, just picking our brains, which important websites are there, which news websites are there, which forum, and just went all the way down the list and just put it everywhere. And then, of course, we asked, I think Warlord Games, I don't know if they put it in their newsletter or not, Beasts of War put it in their newsletter on their website, and a lot of people, and it picked it up too and started talking about it. Sort of, didn't really go viral, but a little bit. Of course, that helps. And then we got about half the response in, I think, first week. It went very quickly. And then we did a couple of follow-ups on not all those websites, but very many. I also went on wargaming forums in Germany and France. I asked somebody to post it on a Polish wargaming forum, Italian, Spanish. It was just really trying to matter reaching everybody, which from one aspect we were kind of should have thought about better. You know, doing a wargaming survey in the middle of July, middle of the summer, is not the best idea because at least in Europe, just about everybody's on vacation. So the odds that we missed a lot of people that way, not entirely absent.
Okay. Oh, so you've covered why you did the survey. You've covered more or less how you were able to spread it. And you use SurveyMonkey, I believe, for crafting it, which is a fantastic tool. Anyone can get access to that. I believe it's free on their website.
Yeah. It's free, but some of the things that we did and some of the analysis tools that we try to use, I think you have to pay for. But it's still, by commercial standards, it's very reasonable.
So then the month ended and you have the 7,759 wargaming results.
Yep.
What do you do with it? That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I calculated that because it was 25 questions. And quite a few of the questions sort of had sub-questions in it, that we had nearly a million sort of individual data items.
That's amazing.
Well, you know, just get a lot of people just answer a lot of stuff.
A million of anything is amazing. I don't get what it is.
It's a lot. During that month, I was just sort of, you know, especially the first couple of days, I was just going to go, you know, I went to SurveyMonkey and I went refresh, and it was, you know, the number of respondents was 300 extra. What? So yeah, that was
pretty awesome.
Cool. That's really, really cool to see. So then we sat down like, okay, so what are we going to do with all of this now? Because, obviously before we started the survey, we spent some time trying to think about what to ask, how to be comprehensive without making a survey that was going to be, you know, 500 questions, and going to take 3 hours because, you know, I'm not a statistician myself, but I knew some people who have market research experience or, you know, experience in working with statistics and doing such research. And they all said, you know, keep it short, keep it simple, make sure that people can do it in 5 to 10 minutes. Nevertheless, there's still this much information, after that 1 month, and just sort of started to, you know, as Stephen actually is helping me, said we just started to slice and dice it. Just, you know, SurveyMonkey allows you to very easily make all kinds of filters, and you can turn them off and on at random, and then you can see what happens. And then we started to just go through all the questions and turning on and off some filters and see, okay, if you say the age thing, you can easily see what the sort of general buildup is of, the age groups of the respondents, and then go, okay, let's see if we just look at the buildup of the age division in North America versus continental Europe, UK, that kind of stuff. And that's where that's how the first results came about, and we're still kind of playing with it. And I suspect we'll still be playing with the information by next year because it's just so much, and you can just keep thinking of different ways of trying to look at it.
So going into all this, you had to have had some questions in your head that you're like, oh, I wonder what the answer to this will be, or will the survey provide an answer to whatever the question was? What were some of those questions?
Well, you know, the graying of the hobby is a big question, but we knew going into it that was not something we were going to be able to answer because, as you all know, graying is a verb, and this is a point in time. So, you know, if we did this 3, 4, 5 times in a row and nothing changed, then we could say, hey, it looks like apparently the influx at the bottom is enough to cover whatever goes up the top.
Would you say, according to the survey results, that the wargaming community is gray?
No.
Okay. I remember in one of the parts.
I don't know what's the average age that most men go gray though.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, and then some men, they never do, or some men, you lose your hair at, you know, a young age. Heck, I have gray hair that I got right after I was in college, so.
Yeah, but you got dark hair. It seems like dark-haired people get it earlier.
Well, I get to hide some of it, and now some of it's a little silvery, so I just kind of tuck it underneath. But like for me, when someone refers to the graying of the hobby, I think of it as meaning that members who are in the hobby are senior citizens. They're people who are, say, 60-plus or late 50s, and that is the average age. I recall in one of the results that you had written about, that was written, I believe the numbers are that 1,600-ish respondents were aged 30 or under, and 6,100-ish are 31 years of age or older. Roughly 79% are 31 years old or older. And to me, that includes people who I would consider to be in the graying aspect of the hobby, but not necessarily, because to me, a 31-year-old isn't someone who I would put in that category.
Let me see what I wrote, actually.
I have some handy dandy printouts in front of me, so I should be able to have it in front. Well, here we go. You said, quote, or someone said, I don't quite remember if you.
I wrote all those.
Okay. Things. Well, according to you, Jasper, quote, now age, whether the hobby is graying was one of our initial questions, but we really can't answer that with just one survey. You go on to say, for now, it's interesting to note that 21% is under 30, 22% is over 50, and the rest is thoroughly in the prime of life / middle-aged. More interesting yet is that there are some clear differences per region.
Yeah, that's right.
So when it comes to the issue of age, at the time that you wrote this anyway, 21% are under 30 and 22% are 50, over 50 rather, which I would consider to be a
so that means about 60% is between 30 and 50.
Yeah.
I would say that means that and if we assume that this is more, I tried it with a little bit like, say if this is historical wargamers or not. If you select for, people who are clearly just in love with sci-fi, then, it shifts to younger very clearly. So historical wargamers, the respondents as a group, as a whole, are thoroughly middle-aged male.
Okay. And so you mentioned that one of the big questions you had was about this whole graying of the hobby. What is it real? Is it not? And, of course, like you said, you can't tell because that implies that there's a trend, and you can't judge a trend by a single instance of anything. Okay. But what were some of the other questions or ideas you had?
I have to sort of – one thing that we also have to say, of course, this is assuming that – the internet participation of wargamers as a whole is equal across all ages.
That's true.
And, you know, if there's an enormous group of historical wargamers that is over 60, but who refuse to use a computer, then we completely miss them. You know, anything we say about this whole survey, we have, the primary thing is always you can say is it's representative for the people who filled it out. If you go bigger than that, it's got to be representative for wargamers who use the internet. I suspect that group is getting to a point very close to, you can't say, I mean, because as soon as I say very close to 100, you guys are going to get 100 emails of people saying, I know lots of people who don't use the internet. Yes, there, but I think especially in the Western world, which is what we're really investigating, internet usage by now is very high. It's going to be in the 90%.
I think you could probably fairly say that amongst the so-called first world, the number of individuals who don't use the internet, that number is diminishing with each and every day, if not each and every year, and that eventually it'll probably reach a point where it's basically will be a statistical zero. You know, the plus or minus is going to just cause things to even out. When it comes to the rest of the world, who knows? It depends on all sorts of other factors, which really don't fall under the purview here. But you raise a good point. With it, anytime we read anything anywhere that, oh, there's a survey, or I talked to 10 men on the street, you know, that famous man on the street thing, and I got your opinion, that reflects what those people think and believe and said. And we can try to extrapolate that for all sorts of other groups and demographics. And of course, I know I will. I'll say, well, according to the, it said this in the survey, so therefore that must mean, and that's not, you get a little wibbly wobbly, with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have to always remember that.
So you must have had other questions or theories, hypothesis in your head that you're thinking, well, the grading of the hobby, that's a big one. But in addition to that, you were hoping to find out about something, or maybe you had some.
I don't think we really had really big questions. You know, it's a, well, for instance, one of the things that's interesting to see is we all think there's this sort of dictum, was told to us, when we, started the magazine, when we took over War Games, Soldiers and Strategy, is that, you know, you always have to have something about World War II, something in Napoleonics, something ancient, you know, those are the big three. Yeah. So, gee whiz, that was confirmed by the survey.
One of the things that was really interesting to me when I looked at some of the results, that you shared was where people, how people rated, the importance of certain things. Over 4,700 people placed the most importance on social time with friends. Yes. As you know, that's a biggie with me. Gaming is great. It's fun to wargame and to talk about it. But the time spent with others is the most important part to me. And for me, that means playing the game. And of course, I'm not one who is into painting. I'm sure that's going to wound Christy in you that I'm just like, whatever, I'll put unpainted rock on the table and it'll be whatever and we'll have fun. But you hear, or at least I hear a lot anyway about people being like, you have to paint. And I mean, there was the editorial in WSNS a while ago that I did a whole episode kind of responding to about whether or not painted miniatures are essential to it. And I still stand by they are not essential. Yeah, you can wargame without having paint on them. Do they make it better? Yes. But seeing the results on the survey, it surprised me because I really did think that spending time with friends would be lower on the importance rating scale than it was.
It surprised me too, but I think it was a happy surprise. I think that a lot of people, you know, still think of wargaming as, you know, as this weird hobby for lonely nerds who still live in their mom's basement.
Hey, I moved out 3 years ago.
Well, see, maybe that's the fact that you're getting to the middle-aged group. But this one, there's more questions about the social aspects, actually, of which we haven't had time to actually, release some of the results yet. It shows that actually the social aspect is very important to almost everybody. It'd be interesting to talk to the people who run the Society for Solo Wargaming and see what they say, maybe if that's reflected in their membership or not. But I have no idea how many that membership encompasses anyway. But it's very obvious that hanging out with friends, whether that's actually playing a game or just, you know, hanging over a table and talking so much that you forget to roll the dice, but that's very important to everybody. And that's I thought that was a good thing, you know, making friends with people who have a shared interest is it's something that's always interested me anyway.
In general, I was kind of surprised with a lot of the, I think this was the part two results that you released with the order of things. The hanging out with friends and number three, playing the game. For me, they're basically one and the same. I know that's not necessarily true for others as defined here, but I was equally astonished both by the fact that the second most important for people at 54% was researching military history, and that painting came down at number four. Painting is what people seem to talk about the most. And then
it's a little bit of
but 33%.
Yeah, but this question was not a ranking of what's most important to you. This question asked you to rank by itself whether you thought an aspect was not important at all, sort of important, or very important. And the number one was the aspect of wargaming with the highest score of people who thought it was very important. That was hanging out with my friends. Does that make sense?
It does. Actually, I have.
So 61% said hanging out with my friends is very important to me. 30% said in some degree, and only about 9% said not very important to me. So, but yeah, you know, and this is a question. Doing the survey has also been very educational for us. You know, you have to be very careful in how you phrase your questions, because what we said is, I paint my minis to the highest standards, which of course is a very different statement than painted minis are very important to me. If you see what I mean, I mean, there's a lot of people who would say probably, and we've had actually feedback about this sentence, people who said, you know, having painted minis on the table is important to me, but I cannot afford, or I am not able to, having, you know, the highest possible standard. So it's a question where we kind of went, should have done that better.
Well, I think, as with anything, it's always a learning experience. And let's see, do I have the question?
So that particular one, you know, to satisfy you, it had, I paint my minis to the highest standard. Even with that very fairly extreme interpretation of the question, still 33% said yes, and 53% said to some degree. Only 14% says don't care.
I would have been in the 14%. I know that's not a surprise to anyone.
By now, not anymore, I don't think.
No, not. But you're right.
It's going to be somebody's life goal pretty soon to get you to paint.
And the ironic thing is, from time to time on our Facebook page, wargamingforums.com/Facebook, you'll see photos of things that I've painted. And what's really interesting for me is that the photos of things that I painted, which I share, are for games I don't play. there's been some Flames of War stuff. I haven't touched it in years. Dystopian Wars, still in the box. I mean, and yet you'll see little photos of things from here and again. But I think you're right with this question in particular, for me anyway, because the question itself is asking, quote, do you consider yourself primarily a miniatures painter, modeler, and collector, or is playing games most important to you? And then it goes on to provide the options. I enjoy hanging out with my friends and the trash talk and so forth. But if that painting question was phrased differently, I would have given a different answer.
Probably. And I think it would have been gone for more. I suspect that if it had been, you know, painted minis, or painting my minis is important to me, something like that, we would have had it would have gotten up higher in sort of your ranking over there. More people would have said it's very important to me.
But regardless, what's also is of interest is the fact that some of the other options just weren't, they didn't get results high enough, is my interpretation, to warrant being given a spotlight in your write-up, such as the quote, I enjoy building the optimal army list. Some rule systems and some games have received the stigma, whether deserved or otherwise, of promoting tourney mindsets and power gaming and min-maxing lists and all that kind of stuff, that people who would play those games therefore receive that same stigma of being someone who's going to do such a thing and that you may not want to play a game against. And yet, if they felt so strongly about it, that should have skyrocketed, right? And some of these are rule systems that we hear a lot about in the hobby. And I'm not going to name any of them because I don't want to, you know, poke fun at people. But I talk with some of my buddies around the game table, and some of these are rule systems we will bash. And we just go on and, like, you know, we won't play with people like that because it's not how I am. But for someone who's into that kind of stuff, they would love it. And yet the numbers of those who responded to the survey, at least, didn't back it up. And I was a little surprised by that.
It rounded down, it's 13% who indicated it's very important to them.
That's pretty low.
Yeah.
That's pretty low. Why don't we move on to something that I said I wasn't going to talk about with you, but you said, no, I don't mind talking about it. So I figured, why the heck not? You did a third write-up. It was, I'm biased. No, I'm biased, which was a great Spartacus reference that I enjoyed. Let's talk about the perceived bias in here. And I'm not saying there is one, but clearly some people do perceive that there was a bias in the survey. What's your experience been with this?
I've discussed it with Steve as well. You know, we were trying to think of a way that you could prove whether there was a bias in the results or not. And we basically concluded it's going to be very difficult to actually say, yeah, there is a bias. Again, because there is no, you can't there's no other frame of reference, which, you know, where you could say, okay, this is what we generally expect to happen, and our results say this, and it's completely different, so therefore there's a bias. Again, and this question seven was difficult. One of the number two, I love to research military history. Originally, that question that read, I love to research, background and fluff or something. Because I wanted to ensure that the, that it was valid for everybody, whether you did actual military history or, you know, you do 40K and you read every single Black Library book that comes out to give you inspiration. You know, if that, you know, if that's your thing, that's fine. But I ran it, past, several war gamers I knew, and one of them said, now you should, you know, don't beat around the bush, make it military history. And then we did, and like, and that led, then that's the one that people, point to when they say there's a bias. You have relatively proportionally more historical war gamers than, purely, than people who prefer sci-fi and fantasy.
I'm not
because 54% said, you know, researching military history is very important to me. However, I also wrote a follow-up to the bias thing, which you maybe have there as well, where I tried to look at what happens if you say, okay, you just go, you apply a filter and you say, now let's see the results if people say later on, I absolutely love sci-fi wargaming. And you still get 44% indicating that they think researching military history is very important. So that could mean various things. I mean, it, obviously it's less. So that suggests that there is a shift, but it's still very high. In fact, it's still the number two. Yeah, it would still be the number two if you ranked it by highest results for definitely important.
I'm not seeing.
So that probably means that that's what I was trying to actually figure out. As I mentioned in that blog, Rick Priestley once wrote a column in WSS in which he said that the whole sort of perceived split between sci-fi fantasy wargamers and, you know, the hardcore historical wargamers, is at least somewhat artificial. Which, if that's true, means that that whole bias is perhaps not as relevant as people think it might be. The fact that 44% of war gamers who indicate that they love sci-fi still say that researching military history is very important to them suggests that perhaps there's much more of an overlap than you might think.
I don't think there is any bias in the survey, but I'm going to say that if any exists, I think it's an unintended one that is self-created by the people participating in the survey. I'm going to use myself for an example. I took the survey one because you said, hey, could you spread the word? And it'd be really nice. And I was like, okay. So I like WSNS. I like Jasper. I like historical wargaming. And I know they do a focus on that. So the questions are probably going to be on that kind of stuff. So when I took the survey, in the back of my mind somewhere, and it wasn't like, hey, you need to do it this way. But somewhere in there, and I know this because I spent a fair bit of time trying to think about it. Like, why did I answer this way? And why did I answer that way? Because I've gone back over the survey. But in somewhere in my mind, it said, well, you know, this is for a wargaming magazine that focuses for a historical audience. So you should view the questions through that lens and answer them in a way that you and other historical wargamers would probably answer and what would be of interest to them. And am I representative of other people? No. I mean, I'm an oddball and I myself, but maybe I'm going to propose that maybe others unintentionally looked at questions and said, well, I like to play World War II wargaming, and so therefore that means, and then without even realizing it, if any bias exists, they may have colored things a little differently, whereas...
It's possible.
I don't think there's any way you can prove such a thing. And again, I really don't think there's any bias in this. However...
In the respondents, it probably was to a point self-selecting, because obviously we focused more on getting the word out in historical wargaming communities than, in say, it was on Daka Daka in a thread and via the, Battle Lost Souls, was it GameWire? But we didn't have a special post there. Maybe we should have, and then we might have had more, responses from people who really prefer more sci-fi and fantasy wargaming. On the other hand, I've seen a lot of people commenting saying, oh, clearly this is from a historical wargaming point of view, which surprised me kind of because we tried to keep the questions as sort of neutral as possible. Obviously, when you're going to ask, hey, what's your favorite period or setting, then you're going to have to list a whole bunch of historical periods. And people might say, well, why didn't you list all kinds of sci-fi and fantasy settings? And I thought about that, but I thought that would be a list without end because, it would, you know, you could maybe have 40K separately, but why? By volume compared to all the other ones, sci-fi is 40K probably, but, you know, dystopian, yeah, you could have that. The Kickstarters of the last two or three years have added any number of fantasy and sci-fi settings. Should they all have their own place? I don't think there's necessarily a point because those are all, if you ask that, then you're asking immediately, you're saying, okay, so it's this system and it's that system because they're always tied in. So that's why we just had broad categories for sci-fi and fantasy, and then pulp and steampunk and alternative history as well because we figured, well, it's a little bit of a separate thing.
Well, I think you were wise to do that just based on the fact, I mentioned earlier in this episode that about a year ago, it was my episode 102. I focused on that academic American Wargaming survey. And in that, I think that one suffered from some bias. Unintentional, but then nonetheless in that some of the results were when it comes to games, and from what I remember from that survey, which was different, it did what you guys did not. It listed all sorts of sci-fi and fantasy war games. It listed 40K and fantasy and War Machine Hordes. Some that aren't even really around anymore, like Mordheim and Blood Bowl and Battlefleet Gothic, a lot of GW stuff in particular, but it didn't have as much for historicals listed. It listed like Flames of War and a few others, but not really many, and not really even really many time periods. So when the results came in, well, surprise, surprise, over 1,700 people said that they play Warhammer 40K, and the highest ranking historical is Flames of War with 433 people. It's near the bottom half of the thing. And I think for that survey, which of course is different than what you guys had created, I think it suffered from the fact that although it did try, but not as successfully, but it did try to go into the historical realm by to spread the word, that it was very firmly entrenched in this sci-fi fantasy wargaming aspect. And if I might be misremembering, and if I am, I apologize in advance to my guest from that episode, but I believe even when I was talking on that episode, episode 102, I raised the point. I was like, well, what about the historicals? Where are they? And I was like, you know, for a lot of people, wargaming is miniatures wargaming and historical wargaming, and that some people just, they don't consider sci-fi fantasy or any of that kind of stuff as wargaming. And I'm not in agreement with those individuals, but some people just wouldn't even put them under the same umbrella. They would call it gaming. And I think that's false, but I brought that point up with the person and they're like, you know, I didn't even think about it. It didn't even enter their mind really to push as hard for the historical wargaming, for their survey of North American wargamers. So I think it's interesting, for me anyway, to look at what they had done. And granted, it was over a year ago that I talked to them. And then of course longer than that for when they actually did the survey. And then to see what you guys did side by side and how I feel you tried very hard, to make it equitable, to make it broad enough for people to be able to relate, whether they do historicals or non-historicals or whatever they do, and yet make it concise enough for people to actually be able to say, I will do this. I will respond to it. Instead of just saying, oh, that's nice. Look what they're doing. That's really cool. Oh, so what else is going on? Oh, there's a picture of a cute cat online. Let me go look at that. you know, cause I mean, cute cats are what promote the internet, that and porn, right? But people answered your survey in is anything in life perfect? No. I mean, I make like 5 million mistakes a day. And yet I think people are willing to forgive that as long as we're all willing to, say, well, you know, yeah, maybe we messed something up or whatever. And again, I'm not saying you did, but, you know, we can always improve.
Obviously. I mean, this, as I said, is very much a learning experience. And yeah, I mean, what you said is what we tried. We tried to make it generalized for all kinds of wargaming, miniature wargaming, I should say. Some people said, hey, you didn't, you know, didn't focus on board wargaming. And that's true. We didn't. It wasn't meant for that.
That's another survey, right?
Different survey, yeah. Then you would have completely different questions, and you could do it all in a single survey. And then the person who was designing the survey would have to include so much survey logic that they would probably get a headache and stop preparing it. So yeah, we tried to make it generalized, but it's imperfect. And as I said, especially with the amount of Kickstarters coming out with all kinds of games that, you know, depending on your definition, could be or could not be considered miniature wargaming, you know, it had to be somewhat broad.
I think it's easy for me or anyone else out there to criticize what you had done or point out stuff or to even just to talk about it, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. And we can always say, hey, you know, that's whatever. We can all play the armchair general. But to actually go and to create this, to put the work into it, to try to analyze it. Oh, no, I know you're not. I'm complaining because it annoys me a little bit when someone's just like, well, I would have done that differently. Okay, well, do it differently. Actually try to help and to create something. And I don't think there's hordes of people saying, oh my God, your server is awful and how dare you. And I don't think it's that at all.
The response overall, as far as I've seen, and I've really tried to see as much as possible, has been very positive. So
that tells you a great deal.
I was very happy with how the survey was received overall.
So I have to ask, I know you're releasing as much of the results as possible in issue 75, I believe, of Wargame Soldiers and Strategy. Are there any results that you'd care to share now? Little teasers for people to go and read more in?
I still have to write the article, so I don't know yet, but you can ask. I mean, you've seen the questions. You're one of the few people, or actually probably the only person outside of Steve and me who's had a chance to look at the questions again, and see what they were. So, do you have anything that you would like to know?
Well, I think you've covered a lot of it. Although I do have to ask about one thing, and you probably already have the answer somewhere. But it goes to the distribution of wargaming. Where in the world do we live, right? Mm-hmm. And in that, you happen to talk about. Let's see. Here we go. Almost 2,900 wargamers live in North America. 2,400 in the UK or Ireland, over 1,800 are Europeans, and over 600 are Aussies or live in New Zealand. Why? What are the numbers for the rest of the world, and why were they so low? Asia, South America, Central America, Africa? What was the difficulties with that? Because they have to be.
I don't think there were any difficulties, but it's just that what you have there is basically, you know, the first world. And where you expect that a lot of people read English.
Okay, that makes sense.
And this is also, you know, a little bit based on our experience, with magazine distribution. I mean, yeah, I know that we have, you know, one or two magazines going to Taiwan, and, I think the most, exotic is that we have a subscriber in Madagascar, I think. Which I always think, I don't know if we still have, but we used to have one, and I forget if it's for Wargaming Soldiers and Strategy or not.
I was just a little surprised, because, for example, I have some listeners in Asia, some in Indonesia, some in China, I think, South Korea, and I even think some in Japan. And so if I have some listeners, I figure there have to be more people who are doing. And I was kind of surprised to not really see any sort of results.
Well, I can see those areas. We had a tab where people could fill it out, and then you see a lot of people who don't think that they actually live. You see a lot of people here who are not entirely clear about the continent they live in.
Well, I'm sure I live on Antarctica.
No, but there's Japan and there's Singapore here. I see, and Japan again, Chile again, Singapore, Hong Kong, Asia in general. There were people who said, oh, why didn't you just ask people for their country?
There's too many of them.
I could have given everybody a list and split it out sort of by like continent and then second thing, country. But, you know, you'd have to remember that when we were starting out, we were hoping for, as I said, 2,500, 3,000 results. Divided by 200 countries, it's going to, you're going to get meaningless results. And we figured that broadly speaking, and this is very, 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 very coarse, that groups in, well, not all continents, because no, UK is not a continent, but it, you know, that it would be, you know, United Kingdom had to be taken separately because the sort of density of wargaming, wargaming clubs, the distribution of wargaming magazines is so high there. North America, continental Europe, which in practice means the Western Europe, really, Australia, New Zealand. And we figured we'd have to take those groups a bit big, so that you could have meaningful numbers of results. And luckily it worked out that way.
I think that was all I had about the survey, but I want to give you the opportunity to share any other tidbits about the survey or just what you guys are working on in general.
I basically, in the first results, I only covered, I think, the first three pages.
I think you might be right. I know there's more to come. You had mentioned you're going to be putting it online, and of course it'll be in that upcoming issue.
I'll be writing an article, but even though I think we reserved six pages, you know, because you have with SurveyMonkey these the option to change your questions constantly and combine lots of stuff, you can think of, you know, when you're playing with this, I'm constantly thinking, oh, let's try this, let's try this. I can't, you know, I won't have space to describe it all, and if I want to show some graphs, I certainly won't. Well, what's interesting, and here's another one that points very much to the fact that perhaps proportionally we had more historical wargamers. Question 14, which is about rule sets in general, it says 65% says that they enjoy rules that encourage historical tactics. That is definitely one that ought to have result in some debate, because some of the more popular rule sets for historical wargaming, a lot of people would say that historical tactics and those rules do not necessarily have very much in common. Trying to be really careful here.
I think it depends on how you define historical and tactic.
Yeah, true. Although, on the other hand, 48% say that they enjoy rules with clever new mechanisms, whatever that means. Well, perhaps something like Chain of Command, which I don't know if you're familiar with that set. It uses dice to indicate what kind of troops you can activate.
I haven't played it yet, but it's next on my list, mainly because I don't have to buy, paint, or assemble anything for it.
46% is, and I enjoy rules with a clear point system. That very clearly agrees. You could, there's, I'm certainly going to try that. I'm sure Stephen will want to try that as well. Various questions throughout the survey, if you select people who agree very much with the statements there or indicate that statements are very important, would allow you to find the real tournament players.
Oh, there you go.
The one about point systems, this one with point systems, the other one about army lists. Mm-hmm. You could probably say some interesting things about that. I'm definitely going to look at that for the article.
I won't show up in either one of those.
Also interesting, 43% indicates that they enjoy random events in their wargaming. 42%, and no, I need to round down this case, but it's 41.5%. I enjoy a randomized turn order.
I do. I think it adds an interesting aspect to a game. Hmm. It, not all the time, mind you, but there are times when it can be a little fun.
It's very interesting. There are many more people who enjoy rules with a clear point system than there are people who say that it is important to have very detailed, clear, and strict rules fit for tournaments. I wonder how that works, because they usually go together, but it's clearly not in the view of the respondents.
I think you're going to unearth a lot of intriguing facts.
No, I think we're going to have a lot of answers that bring up more questions.
So the big question is, will you guys be doing this again? And if so, when?
This is a secret.
Oh, I thought it might, but I was going to try to weasel it out of you.
Well, obviously, it's going to be very tempting to do this again.
I think you have to.
I think we will have to try it again, yes.
At least once more.
Able to get, you know, it's the one fear I would have for a repeat performance is that a lot of people go, I answered that thing last year. I don't want to do it again. Because if you want to keep it up and want to get value and actually get developments and trends, then you would have to have, well, maybe not 8,000 next year, but certainly a few thousand.
I think a key would be if you were able to address some of the critiques, the meaningful critiques that have come to your ears, and also be able to continue to make results available to the public. I think both of those would go a long way to just kind of helping the community in general.
That's true. But here's for spreading the word, very much positive, I think. 82% says they would like to meet new Wargamers to play games with. 5,994.
And therein lies the popularity of the convention or trade show.
Well, I will answer that one.
You may not actually want to wargame with them after you meet them, but it's important to meet the people.
That's a good place to meet new people. That's true. Because if you look at the next one, question is about you visit wargaming shows or conventions, and there you see that about 27% doesn't go there, either because they don't like to go there. That was the response. I hate Wargamer Funk.
That is so,
no, they don't offer.
Are those
what
the solo wargamers? Is that what we think it is?
No, I don't think so. Because
I don't really mean solo wargamers hate other people, but that was a joke I couldn't.
No, it's actually that's previous question. About 4% prefers to play solo game. That's fine. And I think there are very. Did you talk about that with Henry? There are some very interesting mechanisms that you can use to have solo wargaming. It's perfectly fine.
I'm using the Rome Total War computer game for a solo campaign of my own, and it's problematic, but it's interesting at the same time. And gives me,
yeah,
I mean, there's different ways you can do it. So you're going to have more results in issue 75. And when does that come out? When will people be able to purchase it?
That's going to come out at the Wargaming Convention Crisis on November 1st.
Okay, so that
and
is...
it'll be in the stores in the UK about the same time. It should be by then already on its way to subscribers.
And digital subscribers will get it.
Yeah, digital subscribers will have it before then. And it'll be in stores in North America, probably beginning of December.
Okay, so before I move on to the part where I kind of close down and share some announcements, how about you share with people how they can get in touch with you and stay up to date with all that you do and all that Karen Steinway Publishers has on the table?
Well, the easiest, because it's about Wargame Soldier and Strategy, is to go to www.wssmagazine.com. If you want to go to the Facebook page of WSS Magazine, that is very easily facebook.com/WSS Magazine. There's, if it was clever, I would have the Twitter feed ready too, wouldn't I?
I always forget about Twitter, and then I feel bad when someone's like, I follow you on Twitter, but you haven't said anything in a while. Oh,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
People are out
actually,
there.
Could you try to be good about Twitter? Oh, yeah. It's twitter.com/WSS Magazine. They're actually, it's all very much the same.
It makes it easier, right?
Yeah.
That's some smart thinking.
Yeah, I think we have the same with Ancient Warfare. We're pretty successful doing that too, but I think for Medieval Warfare Magazine, somebody else had stolen the best Twitter.
How dare they?
Yeah, how dare they indeed.
I can promise
you. But yeah, that's it. So it's twitter.com/WSS Magazine, facebook.com/WSS Magazine, or WSSmagazine.com.
I can promise listeners I will have links to all of that in the show notes, which you can access by going to wargamingforums.com/WR123. That's wargamingforums.com/WR123. It's actually really good that you had mentioned Facebook, because we've had all sorts of activity on our Facebook lately. We are finishing up a week of naval wargaming coverage courtesy of Manned Battle Stations, which is a wargaming, naval wargaming, internet message board. And then right before that, we did about a week or 2 week focus on Wargame Soldiers and Strategy magazine, just content that was things that I just really enjoyed. And I have to give you, I'm presuming it was you, a big thank you for sharing a Facebook status, about a fundraiser I'm doing. Maybe it was Guy.
That was me.
So I have this big fundraiser coming up that I want to share with everyone. It's going to be about the fourth or fifth year, I believe, that I've done it. It's a 24-hour Gamerthon. On October 25th, I am going to be gaming for 24 hours to raise money for Boston Children's Hospital. This is part of the Extra Life 24-hour Gamerthon. Extra Life is a charity that helps kids to get the treatment that they desperately need, regardless of their family's ability to pay. There's a lot of kids out there who suffer from things like cancer, cystic fibrosis, and all sorts of other stuff. And sometimes their families don't have the money to pay. And when I found that out, my heart broke, because they get sent away. They're like, you know, we can't help you. And so these kids, they go home and they suffer. But an organization like Extra Life makes a difference. It allows them to get the treatments that they need so that they can go and lead fulfilling, happy lives. I have a little cousin. Her name is Gracie, and she was born with cystic fibrosis. It's a respiratory disease, and basically what it does, it shortens your lifespan. Is she going to live to be 50 or 60? No. She is going to die at a younger age. Most people with CF are lucky to live in their mid to late 20s, and they're making advances all the time. One of the things that she has to do is she has to go into Children's Hospital on a regular basis because they have to basically clean out her lungs. They like scrape it out and get all that gunk and stuff out of there. As you can imagine, it's very unpleasant. I would hate it having it done, and I'm a grown up, and I can only imagine what it's like for a kid. But Children's Hospital, they make it an experience that's not unpleasant. They do all that they can to make her feel happy and warm, and they welcome the family. It's just an environment staffed by highly trained individuals, and there's kids' hospitals like this all over the world. So the Extra Life fundraiser is benefiting not just children's, they're the hospital I'm focusing the funds to go to, but all sorts of children's hospitals all over the place. So if you're able to help out by spreading the word or making a donation, I want to thank you in advance. I have a link that you can use. It is wargamingforums.com/charity. If you use that link, it'll bring you to the fundraising page that I have set up with the Extra Life 24-hour Gamerthon. And what am I going to be doing as part of this Gamerthon? Well, first of all, any donations that you make are tax deductible. The proceeds help the kids in need. I'm going to be gaming for 24 hours. I'll have some friends over. We'll be just wargaming. I will have live blog updates on Troll in the Corner. There'll be photos. I'll be tweeting, social mediaing. I might even be able to do a little video live feed at some point. And then later on in the podcast season, I will have an episode devoted completely to the Extra Life 24-hour Gamerthon, in which I give all the ins and outs of what happened. So just thank you in advance to everyone who spreads the word, who helps out in any way possible. And I want to thank you personally, Jasper, for spreading the word. That reached over 350 people, so thank you. I appreciate that. I like how all of us, we each have our own little charities that we're really in tune with. And so every so often you'll see like a wargamer say, oh, you really should support whatever. You should support this charity. I know Stephen McLaughlin is really into the Wounded Warrior Project. Henry Hyde loves combat stress. One of my listeners, Dave, was telling me about this other one that's like combat stress, but it's different. And it's over in the UK, I believe. And it's kind of like Wounded Warrior Project is how I could best describe it. So I put that up on our Facebook and just kind of spread the word because, you know, we all only have so much money out there, but if we can let others know about stuff, together we can kind of help out and make life a little bit better for those who are in need. So I think that's very important. And I have to say, I think wargamers are really good at it. I don't know if it's just something about us that we share a common trait, but we all seem to really try to do our best to help others who are in need.
I think so too. We were actually talking about that recently, that we should consider having our own adopting our own charity for WSS Magazine.
I think if you do, you would be very successful, and any charity would be lucky to have you guys championing them.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that in our next meeting when we have Guy over sometime.
So,
like, it would be worthwhile.
I think so. If nothing else, it gives you an excuse for all of you to get together and have some fun.
Well, we have plenty of excuses for that.
Well, I want to remind everyone that I have an upcoming guest, Aaron Boshin, who is a frequent guest. He's going to be joining me for the very special holiday gift guide episode. That's going to release on November 24th, where we will share what gifts you should give the Wargamer in your life, or maybe you have some people in your life who need to buy something for you for the holidays, and they just don't understand what you do. They know nothing about this, and you want to make their life a little easier. We'll have some recommendations. And then, of course, over the years, I've been lucky to have a variety of guests, and I'd love to know who you would like me to have on the show. So if you have anyone that you would love to get on here sometime, let me know. And if you have their contact information or you can share an introduction, all the better. Don't forget, you can look at the episode guide to find out what's coming up and what's been on the show previously, such as you could go into the episode guide and say, I want to see the last time Jasper Ortiz was on and see what they talked about because I missed that episode. And so you can go there and click on that and do all that kind of stuff. Don't forget, show notes has all the stuff you need. I will have links to all the social media stuff for War Game Soldiers and Strategy. And should I get my eyes open enough, which I'm sure they will be, for the next time that another great wargaming survey comes out, be spreading the word about that as well. I do love to talk about stuff, so.
I'll make sure your eyes are all wide open.
I don't know how many people I was able to drive to the survey this time, but I would love to drive as many as possible and say, hey, go here and do this, because I really think there's a lot of good that can come out of what you've done. And I think you're just touching the surface right now, but as you dig deeper, there's going to be so much that all of us really all over the place can use to just kind of enrich the community.
Well, yeah, we'll see what we can get into the article, and I'm sure there'll be more material sort of bubbling up as soon as we put the issue to bed, because that's how it always goes. But luckily, there's infinite space on the internet, so we can always add more later.
There you go. And then, of course, promote it on your social media and your Facebook.
Certainly, yep. Every time we put up an article, we'll make sure we spread the word, and perhaps in a while after the issue is out, we'll also just do sort of a roundup and gather a bit more information and put it out a bit more than just our own social media and make it into a press release like we did with the survey, because obviously there was a lot of interest in it, and we want to make sure that everybody who took the time to fill out the survey at least gets a chance to look at the free content on the website.
Whenever I'm signed into my social media and I see something from one of your feeds, I always make a point of taking the time to go click on it and read whatever you put up. It's something I look forward to.
Thank you. That sounds good.
Well, thank you again for taking the time to come on this episode of Wargaming Recon. I appreciate it. And I love having you on. You're just a joy to chat with.
Thank you.
I got to say, I'm a little disappointed, though, this time, because last time you were on, a very special member of the team was able to come and make a little appearance, and he's disappeared. I haven't seen him at all.
Oh, well, you haven't heard him then, because he's snoring quite loudly.
Oh, sleepy dog.
Oh, he can wait.
It's those early morning walks you take him. Oh, there he is. He's so handsome.
Hi, Alvin. he was on my left here at first.
Oh, he was so quiet.
He wasn't very quiet here, but I guess the microphone picks up just what I say and not the surrounding sound, so it's good.
Oh, I'm glad I got to see him again. So thank you again for coming on, and I'm just very appreciative that you were able to get here on the show.
You're very, very welcome, and thank you for having me.
Well, as always, everyone knows that until the next time, I hope everyone gets some wargaming in, and no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how busy you are, how many surveys you have to fill out, or how much you have to do at work, that you have to, you gotta, you need to keep
on
gaming.
You can always find 10 minutes a day to paint your figures.
Or that. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Cast, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Geeks Explicitly. New episodes coming at you every Thursday, talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 12-7-games.com.